If you put the wireless mic in the other mic stand, that might be what you want to do.
Oh, that's much better. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I want to start by introducing the two people. What? Closer? Okay. I want to thank everybody for having me here. And I want to introduce the two people seated at the table with me. To my right is Ben Rockwell. Ben is the chair of California Disabled Rights here in Long Beach. He's also a member of the Disability Caucus with me from California. And Ben also was recently in a very big article in the Los Angeles Times as he took the newspaper reporter down the Pacific Coast Highway, showing them how difficult it is for disabled to try and get on curb cuts and how hard it is to just try and go down where the bike paths are for people with disabled, and they did a great article on that. He's also the first person to ever become a firefighter in California.
Well, actually, I was the first person in a wheelchair to finish the CERT program. That's Community Emergency Response Training, as well as the first person in Long Beach to complete neighborhood leadership training that was a wheelchair user.
All right.
Okay. So he's agreed to help us do the second part of the training, and so he'll be answering questions with us and helping to do the ADA training on the second portion. To my left is Sharon Toji. And Sharon's been doing disability access for over 55 years. Sharon and I serve on the Building Standards Commission for the State of California together, and the Access Division. And Sharon represents...
Francie, could you stop for a moment? Could you close the doors because it's difficult to hear them speaking because the noise is filtering in? And if anybody in the audience does need to have a conversation...
The Building Standards Commission, Access Division... we both serve for the state of California. We were both appointed by the legislature. And Sharon represents persons with cognitive disabilities and also the American Association for Hearing Loss, and ANSI. So we wanted to have a diversified group who could represent different points of view and answer different questions. And Sharon also specifically works with signage and people with vision impairments. She has a great deal of knowledge in this area, and that's really important because one of the biggest problems we have is signage for people. And so that, you know, when you walk into a building and you can't find where you're going?
I do it often.
And I really wanted Sharon's input in that area, and I thought you would like to know what's important, what's not, and what you need to know so that people don't sell you a bill of goods you don't need. And so Sharon's going to be talking to you a lot about that. Sharon actually started out as a winner in a contest for President Eisenhower when she did an essay contest on hiring people with disabilities. And that's how her whole career started, on working with disabled, and it was almost 55 years ago. And she, well, actually, 1992 you did the competition, right? You did competition?
No, 1992 is when the ADA started. No, that
okay.
was back in 19...
When did you do that?
50-something.
1950-something, she won the first competition. And then she's been working with the ADA since 1992. So I'm really glad to have them here with me, and I wanted to thank them for taking time out of their schedule to come in and help me do the presentation for the second 2 hours. So... and both of them are doing it on their own time, so I wanted to really thank them. I wanted to start by doing the first part by talking a little bit about the reports and answering any questions you might have on the reports, because I thought that would be where you'd want to start. So I can start with whichever one of the reports you would like, I can start with L.A., I could start with Houston, or I could start with Washington.
I think we ought to start with the stations that are going to require the greatest remediation in the near term. So let's get to the big ones first. So if they're all equivalent, then flip a coin. If there's one that's outstanding and most urgent, let's start there.
Okay. The easiest one's going to be D.C., although D.C. isn't going to be something that's so much under your control as under negotiation of the rental contract.
And so, at least in the case of the D.C., there's an active discussion about trying to get them into their own building, and so that's going to be an issue. But let's go ahead. Let's
start with D.C. L.A. is going to be probably the most difficult. So I guess if you want to start with L.A., we can go there.
Okay.
Los Angeles, what you're dealing with is you've got some questions that you're going to have to deal with. You had an access person come in a number of years ago, and unfortunately, we have a problem here in California where there's a lot of people who go out and sell themselves as access specialists, and they aren't. What we're doing in the state of California right now, just so you know, there's a Senate bill being worked on right now. It's called Senate Bill 747, and there's a number of people who have been appointed to a committee. And what this committee will do, and it's really a good committee, it was put together by, there's 10 activists on the committee. There's representatives from the building departments, the AIA, the Chamber of Commerce's, restaurants, hotels, motels, both sections. There's representatives from Republican Party, Democratic Party. They're appointed by both Judiciary Assembly and Senate. And we've been sitting there for 3 months trying to figure out how we're going to stop this from happening. No more will people be able to go out and say, I'm an expert and I know what I'm doing. They will have to go through what's going to be called a certified access specialist program. And they will have to be trained and they will have to be qualified. And before they can go out and use that name, they will have to go through a program. Every person with the AIA, building standards and everything, will have to go through a training program. Permit and resource management people will have to go through a training program. Even the Bar Association and judges who sit on cases will have to go through an ADA program. There will also be a commission set up, similar to the Status of Women's Commission, who will monitor what's going on. And we've been sitting there writing these laws and rules of what's going to happen with this so that nobody in the future, no business, no one, will have what happened in L.A. where you had somebody come in and say, this is successful and this is not. So no one gets stuck again. And we're going to stop these people. I guarantee you we're going to stop these people who go out and do to you again what happened there because they approved doors that aren't wide enough. There wasn't one door in L.A. that's wide enough. The minimum requirement for an accessible door is 32 inches. That's minimum. Legally, it's 36 inches. Now, Ben is in a big wheelchair. He can tell you how hard it is to get through a 29-inch door. You need the width of the door to get through. Okay? And
could you clarify, when we're talking about doors, you mean the doors to essentially every facility in the building or doors set for equivalent access? For example, if we have five studios, all the doors must be equipped this way?
All your doors to every room needs to be a minimum of 32 inches wide for them to meet requirement of the width of a door for a wheelchair to get in. Yes, there's people who have smaller wheelchairs that might be able to get through the door, and some scooters are thinner, but they're longer, and they might be able to get in the room. But there's a lot of wheelchairs that are much bigger, and they need a larger width to get in. Now, I did in the report give you ideas of how you can get a flat hinge that will give you another inch or two in some cases, where they'll make the door open wide and flat against the wall, and that'll help you a little bit for now. But when a door opens, it only opens at a 90-degree angle in most cases. You know how it sticks out at an angle? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But a flat hinge will, if you don't have anything behind the door, will help your door go all the way to the wall. And that'll give you a little bit more playroom right now. But the only other thing you have an option of doing, if you don't do that, is cutting open the wall and widening the doorways and putting in all new doors, and that can get pretty expensive. And nobody wants to do that to every single door. The studios are even worse because you've got to go into that little entryway, and then you got to do right or left to get into those doors. And that makes it even more difficult. So, I mean, you can really get into a situation, because you also are supposed to have, when you go in through those studio doors, at least a 5-foot turning radius in that little entryway before you make your right or your left-hand turn. And you don't have that available in there. Now, why is that important? A wheelchair, when it goes in that area, can maneuver pretty easily to turn left or to turn right. A scooter can't. It doesn't have the maneuverability to make that turn. So it needs the width of the door to make the turn, to make the cut, to go into the room.
Can I ask the question? For those studios, like we have some edit studios that are just smaller than that altogether, their whole size is smaller than that. If we make facilities available to that code for those people who need that access, is that sufficient if we have other rooms there that can't be made to meet those standards?
What was that?
There's some edit rooms along one wall in KPFK. If you're going down the corridor on the far wall, there's some edit rooms that these rooms are simply smaller than that. So if we have a facility for people who are, for example, in a scooter that meets those standards, is that an adequate thing to do? Or do we need to make all facilities meet this standard?
Okay. The ADA does not require every single room to be, like in the studios, every single room to be made accessible. You can make one set of studios fully accessible and keep that as your main room that's accessible. But that means that whenever somebody disabled is either coming to be interviewed or the programmers are going to use it, they get first priority for the booking. And so you want to make sure you do that. That's the one thing I tried to put in the report, is give you some of the basic requirements that you do that, so you don't think you have to make every single room fully accessible. What you do have to do, though, is make sure the main offices are fully accessible so that people can go into every single office. But with the studios, make sure you do that. Just like your bathrooms, you have two sets of bathrooms. Make sure one set is fully accessible, and on the other set you put a sign that says, accessible bathroom. That's where it is, so that they know to go to that set of bathrooms. And just make sure that they can get to that set of bathrooms.
Chandra had a question for you.
I just wanted to suggest that we hold questions and let Francie make the presentation, because otherwise she'll never get through it. She has 5 stations to cover plus sensitivity training.
I'm only covering 3.
You're only covering 3
today? I covered
today?
The first 2 the first time I was here. And when I was in New York, I covered the first 2.
But you haven't been to any PNB meetings to present to the board here. And these are all the PNB reps, so this is the time to present all 5 stations.
I have been with
been
before.
To the PNB
yes, I have.
Before.
Yeah. Yes, I have, and I covered the first 2 stations the first time.
Oh, it must have been before.
Yeah, it was before you were on the board.
And then I wanted to also suggest that specific follow-up will be needed at all the stations, and that would probably be the best time to deal with corrective action plans rather than here today.
Well, that's not necessarily true, Chandra, because I know that you did some of your suggestions, but this is my turn to answer some of mine.
I just wanted to make sure we cover everything and give you the most opportunity to make all your recommendations today. That's the only reason I'm making those recommendations.
Okay, go ahead, Francie, and we'll hold our questions till you get through it.
It wasn't really necessary. I think we were doing what we really need to do, is talk about this as we go through it, so I can answer the questions. Well, because quite frankly, some of the questions you're asking right now will apply at all the stations anyhow.
So why don't you then, as you're speaking, if you see a hand and you feel it's appropriate, time to take a pause, you call on them. I won't interrupt and I won't recognize
No,
people.
I think
I'll
it's good
you
because you're asking the type of questions that's really necessary. And actually, when we do the training, this is exactly what we expect to happen, is so that you can get an idea of what you need to know and what you don't need to know. And it's really important, because some of this is important. I know that Pacifica wants to go beyond what you need to do, and you can. You have the right to do more than is necessary. I'm going to give you at least the minimum of what you need to do, but you have the right to go beyond that, and I'm going to let you know that too. Anyone can go beyond. The one thing about a strategic long-range plan, when you're doing that, is you start with knowing what you have to do so you know where to start. And you can always go further than that. But it helps to know at least what the minimum is. Okay. And each station is going to be a little bit different because each station is going to have something different to offer.
I just have a quick question. I thought I heard you when you were talking about the accessibility for doors, and you said something like a minimum of 32 inches, but legally 36. Could you please explain to us the...
Okay, if you were having a new building, all the doors, they'd want you to come in at the requirement of 36 inches.
Mm-hmm.
If you were building new. No, none of these stations are new. Mm-hmm. So you're going to try and get it to a minimum of 32 inches. That's the minimum requirement for a wheelchair, that you can get a wheelchair through. But the real width you want is 36 inches. Mm-hmm. But when the ADA was written, they said the minimum that you can get wheelchairs through is 32 inches width. Unfortunately, in the old days, they would allow 32. So unless you want to really go in and cut every door to 36 inches, that's a big cut. And the other thing you have to look at, too, is some of these doors, you're going to run into bearing walls. You're going to run into a corner unit. Like if you look at Eva's door, where her doorway comes to in her office, you were just at, a lot of you went to the station yesterday. She's in a corner, and you come right into a corner, and there's like a post there. It would be impossible to widen that door because of where it hits. So you notice in my report, I tell you that you're going to run into cases where there's no way you can widen that door. So the best you're going to get is the flat hinge. Try to open it wider and see if you can go from there. When you come into a situation where the door cannot be widened because of you might have a bearing wall, you might have a post there, whatever, you might have to then come up with, okay, what do we do if we can't get a wheelchair through that door because there's nothing else we can do? What am I up against? Because one of the things I know that Ambrose told me, what am I supposed to tell you? What's the law? What are your requirements? The ADA gives you things like readily achievable, what's a reasonable accommodation, what do I do then? If there's nothing else you can do, okay, I just hit my head against the wall, there's nothing else I can do, then the person in that office has to meet the person in another location that is accessible whenever there's a meeting. If they can't get into that office, then I go somewhere else. That's what the law says. So she might have to meet anybody who's going to meet with her in the conference room next door that is made accessible. That's what the management has to do. They have to leave their office and go to the accessible location. And they have to know they have to do that. No ifs, ands, or buts. That would be what the law requires, as you go and you meet the person in the accessible location. It's not a hard thing to do, but that's what you have to do. Because that office can't be made wider because of the corner unit. There's another thing where, like, the mail room in the LA office where all the photocopy machines are and everything. When you go into that room, there's like a beam right there, and it's a long hall. If anybody went in there last night. Okay, but that's the situation you go into. I think those are bearing walls. I think that's what the problem is, and I think that might be where the beams are going up to the second floor. Now, I did not cut holes into the wall, so I didn't check that out. However, it's pretty obvious that there's something right there, right, that's causing the wall to go in far, so it's probably either your beams or it's bearing walls right there. Since you would have a major structural change you'd have to make in order to widen those doors, and there's not an 18-inch clearance so somebody can come out and open the door, there's no way you're going to make those doors accessible. It's real obvious there, which means disabled are not going to be able to get in and out of that room, no matter what you do. You want that room to be accessible to everybody. This is an important room for people to be able to go in and do photocopying and printing and whatever. They're not going to be able to do it in that room. So what do you do when you have a situation like that?
Switch it to another room.
You got it. You move everything to another room. So that's why I make that suggestion. If you can't make the room accessible, then you move the things to an accessible room. because this is a room that people do need to use. So you have to convert that room to something else. A lot of ADA is just plain logic.
So you could put one of the other people who have an office that can be made accessible in there, and that person could meet with anybody they need to meet with in an accessible room.
That's correct. So it's not that you have to lose the space. You just have to start using your thinking in another manner. And so you do a trade-off. You move somebody in there that can meet with other people all the time, and then you move the equipment to an accessible room so that everybody can use it. And so that's what I tried to do in the report, is give you ways to make things more accessible. Just like when I talked about the computer room upstairs for the volunteers. You can't get the volunteers upstairs, obviously, at this point. There's no way to get them, right? So you don't send the volunteers up to an inaccessible floor. You bring it downstairs so that they can use the computer area, even if you have to put it into a smaller area. And you make it accessible to them. It's just you start changing your thinking on how you're going to approach it, and that's what you do. And then you can start offering accessibility immediately. And then you deal with it. Now, as to the structural damage, almost everybody I talked to told me you might have some structural damage. I'm not a structural engineer. That's not what I do. But since everybody told me, and by the way, just so you know, I videoed everything, I audioed everything, I took notes, and I have letters from people. So I can back up everything in my report, okay? So if anybody wants to see it, I have it available. The only thing you can't see is the private interviews with the employees on any personal problems that only went to the managers of the stations. But anybody needs documentation, I can back up everything because that's how I do my reports, because I can't write. I can't take notes. So I have everything documented. And so if anybody wants that, I do have it. Everybody told me there was a problem. The only way you're going to find out about the structural damage, if the ceilings are sinking, is to have a structural engineer come in and check it. If it is, you have to make a choice, and it's going to be up to the LA people, and they're the only ones who can do it, on what you want to do if this is, in fact, a problem. The last thing you're going to want to do is build on that floor until you know. It's up to you. You've got to know what you're up against, because if you're going to make that floor effective, whether it's for volunteers, whether it's for more offices, whether it's to make it an accessible floor for your producers, whatever, is to know what you're up against. The archives need to grow more. They need more room. You need more room for the volunteers. You need to turn it into office space for the volunteers to some extent. And you can't do that till you know what you're up against. And when somebody's telling me this has been going on for 10 years, I'm sitting there saying to myself, why hasn't this been done for the last 10 years? Is there any questions in regards to that? So my recommendation is you get somebody in there as soon as possible, because if the archives are sinking the floor, you're going to need steel girders to hold it up if you're going to stay there. If you want an elevator, you're going to need steel girders to hold that floor up, because you cannot put the weight of an elevator on the floor either until you know. It's just common sense.
So if you're, most of this is not for this board to decide ultimately, but for our executives, we need to know what the issues are. But one of the questions is, what does the act require in terms of the expense we might incur? In other words, at what point do we have to say, if we're required to do this, it actually makes more sense economically for us to just be in a different building? How do we make that decision in terms of the ADA requirements?
The reason why I gave you all that information is one of the things that I was told is that about 4 or 5 years ago, there had been an offer on the building about $4.5 or $5 million. That's about 4 or 5 years ago. That's all I know. Somebody had offered for that amount of money. That's all I know. I don't know what it would get now. I don't know anything else. I do know that you would just have to find out what the cost of, you need a construction person to tell you what the cost of reinforcing the second floor is from a construction consultant. I wouldn't know what that is. and you'd have to get somebody in there to give you an idea of what that cost would be. But that's why you do a strategic long-range plan, is so you can get an idea of what the costs would be for that. That's why I tell you all the different things you need, and I gave you that whole list in the report of everything you would need to do to bring the thing into compliance. And then you start matching what the cost would be for, you'd have to, for instance, they'd need to level the parking lot there. They'd have to resurface it. So they'd have to add the cost into that. They'd have to work on widening all the doors. So they'd have to give somebody to give them the cost on that. So they'd need a construction engineer. They need somebody to just review and find out if there is asbestos there or not. Because if you do that, then it needs special handling. Any building built prior to 1973, circa, might have asbestos. Okay? You don't know for sure, but most buildings that were built prior to 1973 normally do. So you just have somebody check it out. Because if there's asbestos, it takes special handling. And nobody can be in the building when you're doing any construction if there's asbestos. That's just your common rule. So you want to know that up front before you cut any hole into any wall. Because it's dangerous to be around asbestos for breathing. Okay, so you just want to know. Because that also then tells you if it's going to be more expensive or less expensive when you're doing construction. So, and that's how you build your strategic long-range plan. And it gives you an idea of what to go against. So you have a price to start with of what you had a bid on once before. And then you add all those things together to give you an idea of when is it time to cut the loss and just say, maybe we need to get out of here, go somewhere else, and build somewhere else. And that's, when am I throwing good money into bad? When you're building brand new, it costs less than 0.5% to make something fully accessible and fully green, by the way, somewhere new. I know that they've been looking for a new parking lot because they don't have enough parking, either to rent or buy. So you would even figure that cost in, because that was something every single employee there was complaining about, needing parking.
But are we required to remediate everything? In other words, if the expenses are well beyond our ability to do it, what's the how do we make, or how do our executives make the decision about what they need to do when? What is the standard?
Okay, here's the interesting situation. Right now, everything you're doing is strictly volunteer. You're not doing any construction right now. So you're in a situation where right now you're doing it all voluntarily under readily achievable of what you can afford, okay? So you do a strategic long-range plan. You do a plan of action. I'm going to do this here, 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 and here in order and try to make it as accessible as possible, as much as I can afford. But you also have one thing that you have to comply to. You're under 504. Because you get federal funding. So you have to do a certain amount of access to make the building as accessible as possible. You don't have a choice because you're getting funding from the federal government as a radio station. So you have to be making an actual effort. You cannot ignore this. And that's the one thing that you have a problem with. You cannot ignore it. You have to be trying. And that's why I give you some specific things that you have to do in a list. So that's the first thing. And that's what one of the things I think you'll see that on all the stations I suggest is trying to do a technology center and working with the cities. And that started with Houston when I was in Houston because I had talked to some people I know in Houston who were willing to come in and work with Pacifica. And when I left Houston, basically what they had said is, give me your wish list, we'll get everything donated for you. Everything. We could probably do that in every station if we worked together. I'm talking about they were willing to come in with computers. They were willing to come in with sit-stand workstations. They were willing to come in with software. They were willing to come in with loop systems, you name it. All you have to do is come up with the space for them. They'll help bring in professors. They'll help you get grants to train people. And what would happen is whenever, you know, training people, all your employees can use all this equipment. Your volunteers can use it. Your fundraisers can use it. And from day one, you're operating in it with accessible equipment in the stations immediately. And I had the same thing set up for New York when I left New York. It can be set up, but you have to have somebody who's an employee with Pacifica willing to be leading this. This can't be done by volunteers. This has to be done by staff because you've got to do grant writers, tax deductions, the whole thing. This is not something you set off to the side. This has to be professionally run because you're working with your business leaders, your community leaders, and so on. Okay? And I can re-put this back together with the people I had worked with when I left Houston and with New York. And then we have contacts here in L.A., and we probably can re-up with our contacts back in D.C. And I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of donations that people were willing to hand over to Pacifica if it's done right. And you use basically the Berkeley plan of the training, 18-month training program that you have going in Berkeley for the training program. But they'll even bring in professors to help train the people and so on. And at the same time, you're training people to work with the radio, whether they want to be a producer, whether they want to be online, whatever. If you looked at that carefully, the idea for the technology centers, instead of you having to go out and buy all this equipment to make your stations accessible, but you have to come up with, you have to start with the basics of having a place for them to work, some accessible bathrooms and so on. You got to at least get that going.
Can I just ask, are you saying, you're sounding like this is in past tense, like you had it set up for Houston, and had it set up for New York, but it's still, we could still do, it's not over. We didn't miss that, right?
Well, we had a little interference in a couple of the stations, and we would have to reset it up again.
Okay, well, I'm talking about Houston.
We had it set up. I can go back to the people okay. if there's a commitment to make it happen. But there would have to be a commitment from Pacifica that you want it to happen. And then I can go back in. There was some interference. It doesn't mean it can't still happen.
Okay, I'm a little confused, but that's all right.
There were some people who went in and kind of tried to set up a different program, and we'd have to go back in. Do you want me to go on to the other stations and talk a little bit about them real quick?
Before you go on with that, I guess if you could bottom line for us what you think are the major points needed to make the station compliant under Section 504 so that whoever is presently might be excluded because of the structure of it could see a noticeable difference in access as a result of something that's within our reach to do. What's our bottom line need there?
Okay, in L.A., you're going to have to move, set up something downstairs until you figure out what you're going to do with the structural problem. And, that's going to be your first thing. You have to set up an area that's fully accessible. You don't have a choice. I made a suggestion that might work. I don't know. That's going to be up to them. I don't work for you. but if you were to, say, take one of your departments that doesn't have a lot of employees, trade it with the computer center upstairs, move the computer center downstairs into one of the bigger rooms.
So you're talking about the area where the volunteers do production upstairs is basically not going to be able to be accessible until there's an elevator, so that has to be moved to downstairs.
Right, because you can't get... How are you going to get disabled upstairs? You can't do it.
But again, following on the principle you just told us about earlier, if we were to move a portion of that downstairs, for example, there's a row of offices that can probably be made accessible easily. If there were a couple of workstations there which access-limited people would have priority to use, that would be sufficient.
Right.
Got it.
So let's say you just, in an exchange, flip-flop it downstairs, make that area downstairs accessible, fully accessible, get your equipment going downstairs. That way it's always available. Then you can bring in the equipment so that it's, you know, with your software, your loop systems, your whatever. And, again, it's all painted out in detail in the report. You can start hiring immediately. You can start training immediately. By the way, you have to have a portable loop system. You also need something. When I tried to do the tape that I'm going to play for you in a little while.
Excuse me, Francie, a portable loop system, will you explain that, please?
Okay.
Here.
Okay, I was going to do that as part of the training later, but hearing impaired, when they come to your meetings, you want to have either a portable loop system or we were going to break out the difference between the different hearing impaired systems that are available. But whenever you go to a meeting and you want people to hear over the crowds of the microphones and there's a lot of people speaking, there's different types of systems you can get that people can plug into their hearing aids that can hear over the noise of the crowd. And you need to have something available for people who are hearing impaired that you can take with you wherever you go. And you should have something at each and every office that's available like that for all the different meetings you go to. And one is at least a portable loop system. Like I say, you can work with the different groups, which Sharon can maybe talk about later or whatever, that you can make available. And one is a loop system so that somebody comes in, they can hear whatever's happening in the group. And I suggested at least a portable loop system. And it plugs right into a hearing aid. And it ties into the microphone system. And that's, and like I say, you can investigate. Ben will tell you the groups, for instance, that are available in L.A. And you can have them come in and talk to you about the different types of systems available. So if you don't know what that is. And like most rooms, a lot of rooms are wired for it. The only problem with a wired room is you can't take it when you go to a hotel. So, you know, it's really important to have that.
Is KPFK the main entrance currently accessible?
Okay. Right now you've got that little pathway that goes up, but you got a tree there that's growing up through the cement. And right now there's a slight tilt on it. I noticed it in my scooter. And I live in Guerneville with the Redwoods. And I can tell you right now, those trees, when the tree roots start coming up through the cement, it's going to bring, the roots are going to bring that cement up over the next few years as that tree gets taller. And eventually that tree is going to make that cement totally come up and tilt to the left too much. And I'm going to tell you within the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to have to either take that tree out or you're going to have to redo that total cement because you're going to have a problem. That's why I tried to put that in the report for you, because you're really going to have a problem with it, unfortunately. As pretty as that tree is, I would highly suggest trying to have somebody, a tree person, come in and move that tree somewhere else, and if you want to save the tree. But otherwise, it's going to take out your cement pathway, because you can only have a maximum of a 2% grade, and that's going to be gone pretty soon. The back doorway path of travel, it's not safe. I tried to leave during the night, and the cars were blocking. They were too close side by side, and I couldn't go straight out. So I tried to go to the right, and there's all these ditches. I almost got killed in those ditches, and you can't go to the other way because you got those bars. So I gave you some suggestions on how to fix that by, you know, painting it. Even though the law doesn't require you to put no parking there, it only does in parking spaces, put no parking, put signs up. But people have got to leave that available for people to be able to get out of that back door. And if you don't, you don't have to bring somebody in to do the grading. You can actually get some of your asphalt fill yourself to do, to pick a patch right there. But I'd do it as soon as possible before somebody gets hurt. There's ways to do some of this stuff yourself that isn't real, real costly. You know, you can even paint in your own disabled parking space. I did it for the Democratic Party. I sat on the sidewalk with 2x4s. And laid out my own parking space. And you can do it yourself. I'll give you the measurements and the pictures and everything. You don't have to pay somebody to come in. And you can buy the paint yourself. You just have to know which paint to buy that won't come up with the asphalt. You know, everything doesn't have to be expensive, guys. But you need to take care of the parking lot as soon as possible. And you've got to put no parking and paint the curb if you have to in front of the drop-off zone, because people constantly park in front of the what's the thing called when you go up the curb cut. There's always somebody blocking it. The whole time it was there, every time I turned around, somebody was parked there and blocking the curb cut to get into the front door in LA. Anything else in LA for?
What's the total cost for making LA right?
Oh, I can't tell you. Not until you have some experts in there and we know what the cost is going to be for the structural. And you've got to have some experts in there to find out about the structural.
So we got to get an architect?
Yeah. Right. You need a construction, and you're going to need a constructional engineer to know exactly what the problem is. Can you turn that over? Unfortunately. Sorry about that, guys.
Any more questions here? Yeah, go ahead. Next station then.
Okay. You guys wanted the hardest one first. Sorry. Okay. Let's do Houston. Houston's interesting. It's a beautiful old building. I got to learn all about the history. James Baker, huh? James Baker's used to own the house. Everybody knows who James Baker is, right?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah, for you poor guys. Anyhow. Okay. The good thing about Houston is you own the property, and so you have tons of options of what to do. And everybody had their own choices, and everybody had suggestions of what they wanted to do. Some people wanted to add on to the building. Some people wanted to build a new building. Everybody had suggestions, and everybody was very vocal about it, and everybody was all excited. And it was, I got to give you this, they had the most accessible bathroom in all of Texas. They did a great job. I mean, it was nice to find an accessible bathroom in Texas. They're also in what is called a zone-free coded area. In other words, they don't have to have permits to build. I've never seen anything like it, but in Texas, they have areas where you do not have to have permits. It's an unbelievable area. The hotel I was staying in, they gave me a hotel room, and they said, oh, it's an accessible room, right? Well, as an ADA person, you know, you're saying, oh, that's a bit interesting. And I go into the room, and there is one bar going at an angle in the shower. No bars around the toilet at all. And that was what they called accessible. And I'm sitting there thinking of all my friends who could not even use a toilet because they couldn't get to it, get on it or off it. But that made that room accessible, the one bar going at an angle in the hotel room. And I said, welcome to Texas. Yeah. And, you know, just recently on this committee I was on, the AIA wanted to only have, to require AIA contractors to have 1 hour of training every 2 years on the ADA, just like Texas. And I said, oh, please, don't take us backwards. Don't put us in the same as Texas. Please, give me a break. And I said, I was just there. We don't want to do that. We want to go forward, not backwards. And it just cracked me because I just remembered that bathroom, right? And I said, no, the only accessible bathroom I saw was at the radio station. So it was really great. Everybody was wonderful there. They really the nicest people in the world. I love that station. But the only thing is we started with, we have what, a ramp and we have a bathroom. And from there on, they need help. We got to give these people help, a lot of help. But the nice part was we have a really, really, really good friend in Texas and the gentleman who offered to help us there, like I say, who said, send me your wish list. They have a lot of old furniture. Everything needs to be raised. They need a lot of help. But it's something you can do something with. My suggestion to Texas was, give me your conference room. Let's turn it into a technology center. Take the outside deck, build it in, because they already have a framing, and you can make that your conference room. If you give me that, I can help you because I have friends. The gentleman who offered to help us used to be, sorry about this, President Bush's advisor on access for the vets and the disabled for the whole nation. He now didn't like Bush, so he quit. He's back in Texas running all the independent living centers for the whole state, and he has contacts with everybody. And that's why he was able to say, give me your wish list. Okay. You can't do anything with the upstairs. In fact, my favorite was the little closet that had been converted to an office. You would have to gut the whole upstairs. I mean, you'd have to start over. The downstairs, even the little closet down the end had been converted to an office. The rooms are big enough. That's not the problem. It's just a matter. It's a house. And quite frankly,
they do have an elevator there. Do they have an elevator?
No.
No elevator?
No. No elevator. Okay. In fact, the stairs are hysterical because the way it's been explained to me is in the old days, one side was the servants' stairs and the other side was regular stairs. So you've got one that's 27 inches wide and the other one that's 42 inches wide. So you couldn't even use the stairs to put a lift on or an elevator in because they aren't even the same size on both sides of the stairs. So you've got a situation where the halls aren't even wide enough. Let's put it this way, the way Ben put it. If a pregnant woman can't go down the hallway, nobody in a wheelchair can go down the hallway. So, you know, I just want, we have to get that through. There's no way you could do anything with upstairs. You can't even go down the hallway on the other side really well. There's no way. When you go down in a scooter, the only way you can make a turn is if you pull into the room, back out, pull in again, back out, pull in again, back out, and then maybe you could turn around and come back down. They've converted the patio into Dwayne's office. It's a difficult situation.
Just a comment. If a hallway is so narrow that a person with claustrophobia is afraid to go into it, it's probably too narrow for a wheelchair.
The employees have a lot of suggestions, and some of them want to add on to that building, but it would mean gutting what you have. Others would like to just build a whole new building. I think that's your best bet. That's up to them, though. They're the ones who have to raise the money, okay? It's going to be up to the board of directors there what they want to do. My suggestion there, go with the technology center. If they're going to donate everything to you, you can set up right now that conference room into a technology center. The volunteers can work there. The employees and staff would benefit from all the equipment. They don't have any new equipment at all. Nothing. I mean, somebody had to borrow a laptop just to be able to look at the DVD we played in order to be able to watch it when we did the sensitivity tape. They need a lot of help. We think we can get a lot of stuff donated for them. And I think that's your best bet is let them go with it. I mean, every desk is an old, you know the old desk that you would get donated from a rummage sale? Mm-hmm. This is what they're dealing with. They need help. Desperate help. We need to help them. I love everybody there. They're wonderful people, but they need help all the way around on everything. The report speaks for itself. They haven't gone digitized yet. Well, they might have since I've been there. I don't know. They might have started. No. Okay. So it's
HD radio.
No, digitizing like the music library or anything, putting it on computer or.
Yeah, they don't know what that is.
Well, yeah, they've got a library.
You have digitized carts.
They've got a library that's digitized. Yes.
Anyway. They're talking about putting them all in a hard drive.
You're supposed to be saying we.
Who's we now? We're talking about Texas.
Texas.
You guys.
Go ahead, Francis.
Okay. No, okay. So Texas needs absolutely everything. I mean, absolutely everything. I love them. I think they need to do a long strategic long-range plan, and they need to start all over, and they need a lot of help. And I think we can get it for them. I really think we have people there. We have some really good friends there who can help them with access, but they have to start from scratch. They have nothing.
Is there any structural engineer that's needed there?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Obviously, the upstairs cannot be used at all. Now, so that's a given. You can't get anybody up there or a wheelchair around up there. The walls have got dangerous substances in them, probably.
We know, yeah.
So you're not going to gut it. So if we open downstairs, is that good for a stopgap or what?
Well, that's why I suggested like this technology center or something, because you can put in sit-stand workstations, you can put all your accessible equipment. But see, you still got this problem. How do you employ anybody when all your employees are upstairs and no disabled can get upstairs to work for you? So one way or the other, even though you might be able to put in a technology center and you can have volunteers come in and work, right? But how do you employ somebody when everybody who's employed is upstairs, just about, other than the few departments downstairs? It's kind of a stopgap problem.
It seems like there's no solution. It's problematic.
We start with the technology center, and we at least get going there. Now, there is something I found out about that might help a little bit. And I know IBM does it a little bit. Apple has a computer that I saw when I was in New York. And it's an interactive computer that has a camera built in and everything, and it's got a little base this big, but everything's built into the screen and the monitor. And what's really neat is you have one upstairs, you have one downstairs in the department, like you're both working together and you can see each other and talk to each other as if you're both in the same room. That's one way to do some employment of somebody in the same department without them going up and downstairs. And I've suggested purchasing some of those for now, like especially in L.A. and so on, wherever you can't go upstairs, downstairs. Now, I know you can put together the same setup with IBM. The only reason why I say anything about the Apple, only because it's all built in and you don't have to go buy all kinds of extra stuff. And I, like I say, you can do it also with IBM, but I like the Apple one because you can move it anywhere by just unplugging one plug and plug it. And it's also great, like, for each station to have one if you want to do meetings with each other, because it's like you're all in the same room with just having that one thing, and you can move it from room to room if you want to have meetings with all the radio stations and so on. So I'd suggest you look at some of those, too, at least having one per station. But that's a way to also work together. And then you could have somebody working with whatever departments are upstairs and whatever departments are downstairs. So that's a step gap for until you come up with whatever you're going to do. So that's another possibility of a way to employ somebody with whatever department's upstairs and whatever department is downstairs. There's ways to get around it until you finish coming up with whatever you're going to do.
Yeah. Just 1 second, Francis. Greg is, or the Houston manager is right here. Dwayne, you agree with what Francis is saying here? All the problems she's pointing them out? Okay. Go ahead. Yeah, continue.
Can I ask a question?
See? It's the only way to start until they can do whatever they're going to do. And like I say, they have the nicest part is they do own the land, they own the building, and then whatever way their board decides they want to go, they can go. And it buys them some time to do it, and they can get going.
Yeah, go ahead, Roberto.
My understanding here is the solution here seems to be that they should just rebuild.
What?
Rebuild. Rebuild.
Rebuild.
If that's what they want to do, or expand. But I mean, they have to decide. how they're going to raise the money and which way they could go. It's their board of directors that has to raise the money there. So they have to go with whichever way their board of director wants to go. I can't make that decision for them. I can just give them the suggestions and find a way for them to be accessible until they get there.
Okay, by expanding, you mean that in the property they can add another piece that's totally accessible and they would not have to touch the rest of the building because that...
Oh, they'd still have to... No. If they add another piece, they have to make the part they're in accessible too.
Including upstairs?
Eventually, they'd have to gut it out and make it accessible too.
So then
they cannot, because I guarantee you, even if they said they were going to never use the upstairs and just use it for storage, eventually they'd be back upstairs again. So they would have to. Yeah.
Hi, I'm from Houston too, Wendy Schrell. So I mean, I kind of knew all this stuff before your report, but thank you very much. But I have a basic question. I mean, my understanding of ADA law is that you're not allowed to discriminate against people with disabilities. That's the what I have in my head. So then you say in your report on KPFT that while guests and volunteers are waiting, they can listen to the current interviews or whatever's on the radio through the speakers in the station. And then you say, but someone who is deaf would not be able to hear this. This would be a good place to consider having a screen with real-time captioning playing at some time in the future. Are you saying here that we should turn off our radio and our radio station?
No. If you read that, there's got 3 stars. It's an asterisk for a proposal for a long-range plan of something you could do. That's a long-range plan proposal of an option of something you can get to.
Okay.
It's a strategic long-range plan.
It's not considering discriminating against the hearing impaired if the people there can hear the radio in our radio station.
No.
I'm totally serious.
No.
Okay.
I give you options throughout these reports of things you can do later on and add to.
Okay.
And that's why you have a strategic long-range plan with different options of things you can do in the long run.
Thank you.
That's all. I'm trying to help people things they can grow into also. Because it would be nice if people can do that eventually. I'm just trying to help.
No, yeah, that's right. Thank you. We need it. Anyone else?
And it's footnoted at the bottom, so it tells you it's a strategic line. Well, it's supposed to be. Donna tried to help me do that.
Lunch. Hi, Francie. Hi. I'm sitting over here seeing dollar signs, of course. I said I'm sitting over here seeing dollar signs, of course. Let me clarify, if I can with you, how the ADA legislation works. There are 2 or 3 critical components, as I understand it. One of them is that if an employer takes the posture that this is expensive and beyond our budget, then our options in that case are to look to grants and supports from the community, ADA community especially. The other option is to put it into a long-term strategic plan where you can ramp up to it over time.
Right.
And that satisfies the action requirement. That is to say, you're not ignoring it. You are placing it in the context of a plan such you can address it, and that handles the federal requirements.
Right.
Okay. So those are the options in that situation. The building thing is confusing me, where people have come to me and said, oh, we have to sell the building, and we have to move out, and we have to buy a...
Your question comes into what we're going to do in the training after the tape on readily achievable.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify the options, because I think that's what some of us are asking. What are our options in the current circumstance that covers all the possibilities? And those are the ones I'm getting so far?
Yeah, you're getting it exactly right, and that's why we're going to do a specific training on options on readily achievable, reasonable accommodation, and so on. And that's what the training is all about, to show you how to do that and how to set that up and talk about some of that. And so I'd like to really go through that with you so everybody doesn't get scared and run away and say, oh, my God, what are you doing to me? I brought terminology with me and so on so we can go through that for everybody,
okay,
if that will help. That's what I was specifically asked to address in the training.
Mm-hmm.
Would that help?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not going to talk about PFW?
Yeah, that's next.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll let you run the film, and then we'll go into exactly that. That's what I've got Ben and Sharon to help me with.
Okay.
So can we go on to real quick to wonderful...
Excuse- Excuse me, I want to ask one follow-up question to Lonnie's. With regard to Lonnie's question, you and Lonnie both agreed that there's a long-term plan that's involved.
Right. That's okay. Like and, I said, we're going to do that as part of the training, because I'd like to I'll go into detail on that.
No, I have no problem with that. I just want to understand, what do you think long-term planning is? 3 years, 5 years, 10 years,
it depends.
15 years?
It really depends. Okay. And that's because there are some complications here, because, again, can we hold that off? And can you write it down? And I promise to address it. As soon as, right after we do this, we'll run our little video, and then we'll go into that. I promise. Okay, let's, we have people leaving.
Go ahead, Francis.